explored. Her hair hung in a straight, sleek curtain down her back. Every muscle in my body tensed. My cock went rock hard. It was too soon. I shouldn't have come here. I wasn't ready to see her and not feel things.
"Looks like someone isn't waiting around for you to call,"
Nash observed. It was then that I realized she wasn't alone. She was on a date with Kurt Michaels, the kid-loving teacher. He looked exactly like the kind of guy who would have kids. He'd buy a minivan and coach baseball, and every Christmas Eve, he'd stay up late putting together toys. Fuck.
"Man, that's gotta sting," Knox said smugly.
"Gotta admire our guy Luce here," Nash said. "If Angelina had shown up on a date, I would have gone in swinging and not stopped until I carried her out over my shoulder. Not Rollins, though."
Luce could give a shit that the girl he pushed away because he was too chicken shit to have feelings just showed up on a date, Knox said, picking up the thread.
"Fuck you both," I said into my bourbon.
"You could at least stop staring at them like you want to rip his arms off prior to carrying her off like a caveman,"
Steph suggested. "Fuck you too," I shot back. Jeremiah held up his hands and grinned.
"Don't look at me, man. You live your life the way you want."
What I wanted was to turn away, to at least look in another direction, but I was riveted. The silver tips in her hair were gone. In their place was a single lavender streak.
"Now, I'm a straight man," Knox mused at my elbow. "As such, I'm not the greatest judge of male attractiveness, but that guy is hot."
"Agreed,"
Steph, Jeremiah, and Silver the bartender said in unison.
"I hate all of you," I announced.
Knox grinned. Silver smirked and slid me another bourbon. The conversation shifted to weddings, family, and small-town gossip, none of which I could contribute to. Not that I was listening anyway, since Sloane had leaned in and put her hand on the teacher's arm as they shared a laugh about something. My insides coiled into an icy knot as a torrent of delusional thoughts raced through my mind. Her hand should be on my arm. I should be the one sitting across the table from her. I should be the one taking her home, waking up next to her, reading what she was reading, yelling at the evil cat. It should be me in her life. Sloane released the teacher's arm and got up from the table. Without even glancing in my direction, she made a beeline for the restroom. I poured the bourbon down my throat, set the glass on the bar, and followed her.
"Oh no, not today, Satan,"
Sloane announced, shaking her head when she exited the restroom 3 minutes later and found me lurking like a felon.
"I just want to talk," I assured her.
"There's nothing to talk about."
She'd frozen me out for nearly 2 weeks and now tossed casual disdain in my face like I was some petty annoyance.
"How's your date going?" I asked acidly.
"Great. Thanks for asking," she snarled.
"You're welcome. I'm so fucking happy for you," I shot back.
"I'm surprised you didn't bring your parade of women out with you tonight."
"Jealous?" I asked, hoping.
"You're the one who cornered me outside the bathroom while I'm on a date with a sweet, smart, hot guy who is excited about starting a family, Lucifer."
"Come over tonight," I said, hating myself even as I said the words.
"Gee, I can't. I'm busy having the case of whiplash you caused," she snapped.
"Now you're being dramatic."
If fire could explode from a woman's eyeballs and incinerate a man, I would have been nothing more than a pile of ashes.
"Do you really not get it? We had sex. You decided to stop having sex with me. The end."
"There was never going to be an end to us."
"It was more than sex, Sloane. We've always been more."
"Yeah? Well, even if we were more at one point, you not only walked away, you pushed me away, burnt the bridge, and ran like hell. But that doesn't matter."
I beg to differ.
"Ugh. Still annoying as hell, I see. Get this through your mercurial head, Lucifer. I want a husband, a family, a man I can count on to be there, especially when things get tough. I'm not ever going to settle for someone who runs just when things are getting good."
"You admit they were good?" I held on to that with both hands like it was a lifeline.
You're an idiot.
You drive me insane. I don't want to be with you, but all you have to do is walk into a room and I can't help myself. I didn't want to talk to you. I didn't want to hunt you down and force you to look at me just so I can get close enough to see the green smudge in your left eye. I sure as hell didn't want to beg you to leave your date so you could come home with me tonight.
There was fire blazing in Sloane's eyes now. I just wanted to touch her, to let that fire burn me.
You arrogant pain in my ass, she hissed. He's a nice guy. I'm sure your incredibly good-looking astronaut is nice, too. You wanted our sexcapades to be over, so you ended them. You don't get to whine to me about your choices.
I couldn't help myself. My hands found her hips, and I buried my face in her hair, breathing in the familiar smell of her shampoo. She let out a breathy moan that drove me mad and relaxed infinitesimally against me. I could feel her resolve melting. The physical attraction was too much for either one of us to deny, and I wasn't above using it to my advantage. I'd been hard since the second she walked in, but now my cock turned to stone. Pressing my luck, I thrust against her, letting her feel my erection. It wasn't a mistake. We're no good for each other. Her breath was coming faster now, and the hard outlines of her nipples under her dress made my mouth water.
Agreed, she breathed.
I missed touching you, I said, pressing my mouth to her neck. If she did go back to her date, I wanted my mark on her. It was an asinine, caveman-like desire. I let one hand trail over her shoulder to her breast. She gasped when I cupped it, kneading the flesh until I could feel the hard point of her nipple against my palm.
Lucian.
My name from those red lips had me losing my fucking mind. This was another mistake in a long line of them where Sloane Walton was concerned. I shouldn't have gotten so close. I couldn't control myself when I was this close to her.
Let me touch you. Let me taste you,
I whispered, thrusting against her again.
Oh, no!
She growled the word even as her hand shot out to cup my erection. I was so close to release I didn't dare draw a breath.
God damn it, Lucian, she muttered. I can't believe I almost let you do this again. Do you have industrial-strength pheromones or something? God, I really hate you. You suck.
I hate to point this out given the situation, but your hand is on my dick, Pixie. And if you move a muscle or take a deep breath or even make eye contact with me, I'm going to come. I realized the mistake a second too late. Because she didn't take her hand off my cock. No. The woman deliberately licked her bottom lip, shoved my hand into the top of her dress, and then gave my dick one hard jerk.
Fuck,
I rasped, as she held my aching hard-on in a death grip.
Did you get what you wanted?
She whispered in my ear as her nipple taunted my palm.
Then go the hell home and forget I ever existed.
As if that were physically possible. This isn't what I wanted, I said through clenched teeth. She raised an eyebrow and gave my shaft another squeeze. She was so fucking beautiful when she was being diabolical.
Bullshit.
Shit, fine, okay, of course this is what I wanted. You know how good it was between us, I reminded her.
I'm fully aware of how good the sex was. It was everything else that was subpar. I'm not settling for being someone's weekend fuck buddy anymore, and I'm sure as hell not allowing some overgrown man-child to cast me aside like I'm nothing because he can't deal with feelings. I'm out of your league, Lucifer. This was your last freebie.
I wanted to kiss her, and judging from the look in those heavily lidded green eyes, Sloane was having similar thoughts. I wasn't above taking advantage of that.
They're a problem.
I didn't need to look up to know the Morgans had entered the hallway. I love you two like brothers, but if you don't leave now, I'm going to rearrange your faces, I threatened. Sloane rolled her eyes and removed her hand from my throbbing dick.
Man-child.
Sloane, which of us do you want to leave, me and Knox or Rollins? Nash asked. She locked eyes with me, and I found that dark smudge in all that green.
I want Lucian to go, she said firmly.
Politics, I whispered. But she shook her head. No more, Lucian. It's time for you to go.
My heart, if I actually had one, fell out of my chest onto the floor and was crushed under her boot as she turned and walked away from me.
Let's go outside, Luce, Nash said in his cop voice. You look like you could use a smoke break.
Each brother grabbed an arm and hauled me through the kitchen and out the side door into the parking lot. For once, they were united, and perhaps for the first time ever, it was against me.
You don't get to treat her like that, Luce, Nash announced when the door slammed shut behind us.
I really want to introduce my fist to his face, Knox said through clenched teeth as his boots scuffed at the gravel.
I get it, believe me, but we can't, Nash insisted.
I hate not getting to punch people.
There's nothing stopping you, I said, deliberately taunting him. A fist to my face would feel better than the raw, jagged hole in my chest.
Knox's fist relaxed, and then he was pushing a finger in my shoulder. You're lucky your dad was an abusive asshole. Otherwise, I'd be mopping the floor with your dumbass face.
We'd scuffled as young boys always did, thrown rocks at each other, wrestled in the creek. But somewhere along the line, Knox and Nash had continued their pummeling of each other, and I'd been left behind. They'd fought over toys, then bikes, then women.
What does my father have to do with this?
Knox looked to his brother for help. Nash looked at his feet.
Why don't we go get ourselves another round? Save ourselves the trouble, he suggested.
Not until you tell me why you make each other bleed on a weekly basis, but you're acting like I'm some delicate flower. Using Sloane's exact words made me miss the taste of her even more.
Getting hit doesn't mean the same thing to us as it does you, Knox said finally. If I punch my pain-in-the-ass brother in the mouth, it's because I love him and he pissed me off.
Expound, I demanded.
Fuck, Nash muttered.
Finish it, I ordered, growing impatient.
We don't hit you because you got hit at home. Your dad wailing on you was all kinds of fucked up. Maybe we didn't know exactly what was going on, but we weren't stupid. At least not that stupid, Knox amended.
You don't fight with me because you think I don't know the difference, that I can't handle it.
They glanced at each other, then shrugged.
Basically, Nash said.
Yep, Knox agreed. Besides, you're more likely to throw some fancy lawyer than a punch.
I took off my jacket and draped it over the tailgate of the nearest pickup. Knox hooted. The side door of the bar opened, and Steph and Jeremiah stepped outside, holding their drinks.
Told you we didn't want to miss this, Jeremiah said.
Can't we just have one night that doesn't end in someone getting punched in the face?
Nash grumbled. Not tonight, I decided.
You sure about this?
Steph called to me.
There's two of them and one of you.
You're here, I pointed out as I rolled up one sleeve.
I am, but in this case, I'm Team Sloane. You dicked over a great girl for reasons that probably made sense to you at the time, but in reality are total shit. I gotta cast my vote with the Morgans here.
His morals annoyed me.
Same here,
Jeremiah agreed. I turned my attention to my other sleeve, unbuttoning the cuff and beginning to roll it up. I hate all of you. What the hell are you doing?
Knox was pacing back and forth, rolling his neck and taking turns, stretching each arm across his chest.
Clearly, this guy hasn't been in a fight over the age of 30, Knox said conversationally to his brother.
You gotta warm up, Nash instructed, dropping into a squat.
Knox rolled his neck again and started performing shoulder circles.
What happened to the days of sucker punching some unsuspecting asshole in a bar? I asked.
Throw a punch and pull a muscle in your back so bad you can't wipe your own ass, then we'll talk,
Nash advised, circling his arms backward, then forward.
This is more anticlimactic than I thought, I complained.
A fist shot out and rammed into my jaw, snapping my head back.
That's what happened to sucker punching, unsuspecting asshole,
Knox said cheerily as my head rang like the inside of a church bell.
Do better. Don't treat women like shit, especially not Sloane.
Christ.
I bent at the waist, rubbing my jaw and biding my time. I didn't treat her like shit. We agreed it was nothing, and then we ended the nothing.
That's bullshit, and you know it. Besides, you can't be done already. Nash didn't even get a shot yet.
Knox insisted, slapping me on the shoulder. Let's go back in and drink, Nash suggested, sounding disappointed.
You didn't get to hit him yet. It's pretty fucking satisfying, Knox said.
Guess I'll just insult him and call him names for being a coward who's afraid of a little blonde librarian, Nash said.
That little blonde librarian was more terrifying than any of us, and we all knew it. Knox was half-turned to look at his brother and didn't see me coming. My fist plowed into the side of his face with satisfying force. He stumbled sideways before recovering with a grin.
Now that's more like it.
My turn, Nash said, moving into position. You don't get to treat Sloane like she's some one-night fuck. Doesn't matter what went down between you two or how things end, you treat her with respect.
What are you two, her big brothers?
I feigned a punch and Nash ducked. He caught me with an uppercut to the solar plexus that knocked the breath right out of me. I swung again, glancing a shot off his jaw. My friend, the goddamn chief of police, grinned wickedly and drew back his arm. I blocked, but not well enough. His blue-collar, law-abiding fist caught me on the bridge of the nose.
Didn't hear a crunch, Knox said.
I'm holding back, okay?
Nash muttered. He grunted as my left fist connected with his bad shoulder.
Oh, somebody's here to play dirty, he teased.
I'm here to beat some sense into you two. Sloane means nothing to me.
Bullshit!
Nash punctuated each word with a fast jab.
I saw you climbing out of her bedroom window in high school. I see the way you look at her like she's the goddamn sun and you're not supposed to stare directly at her, but you can't help yourself.
None of us can, fucking idiot,
Knox added, shoving his brother out of the way and landing a punch to my eye.
I'm not you. I'm not cut out for a relationship, especially not one that neither of us wanted in the first fucking place,
I argued.
Just because you say you don't want it, don't mean you don't want it,
Knox said, ducking my fist. Nash took a swig from a water bottle. He's the idiot who fake dated Naomi and then tried to real dump her.
Where the hell did you get a bottle of water?
I panted, and slapped Knox across the face to change things up. He was unfazed.
I'm not in love with her, assholes.
The words tasted strange in my mouth. I chalked it up to blood.
He's a delusional idiot, Steph assessed.
Agreed,
Nash said, tagging back in.
I feel sorry for him, Jeremiah said.
Are you enjoying yourself?
I asked Steph as he pulled out his phone and started taking pictures.
Immensely.
Nash and I continued trading blows in a dignified, well-paced fistfight. It was so dignified that even the patrons just arriving in the parking lot didn't bother hanging around to watch.
Evening, folks,
Harvey Lithgow, a bear of a man in leather chaps, said as he wandered toward the front.
Evening, Harvey, we said in unison.
You're still holding back, I complained, when Knox jumped in to land a shot to my gut. My entire upper body already felt like I'd been backed over by a truck.
Yep, he said easily.
You keep holding back, I'm going to take advantage,
I warned, throwing an elbow that caught him squarely on the chin, followed by a shot to the gut. He spat blood into the gravel and grinned.
Fuck around and find out.
Melee wasn't the right word for what proceeded. Without any real hatred driving us, we mostly just used our lifetime of history to sneak past each other's defenses to land cheap shots.
You give up yet? Nash grunted.
We were all on the ground. I had Nash on his knees in a headlock, but he was making an admirable effort to dislocate my pinky finger. Knox had my left arm pulled behind my back, and I had my foot in his groin.
Everyone smile and say, dumbass, Steph said, stepping in front of us.
Jeremiah stepped in front of us and flashed a cheesy smile and thumbs up as his boyfriend snapped another photo.
Don't make us beat your ass, I warned him.
I released Nash, who mercifully let go of my pinky, and gave Knox a half-ass kick to the thigh.
The three of us flopped over in the gravel, bruised and bleeding.
"Sloan is going to kick your asses for kicking my ass," I said, snapping my fingers for Steph to throw me my jacket. He hit me in the face with it.
"No fucking way," Knox said, swiping Nash's water. "Girl hates your guts. She'll probably give us trophies."
I shook my head and produced my cigarette and lighter. "She'll be pissed you didn't let her have any of the fun."
"Why can't you just take a shot with her?" Nash asked.
I savored the first sweet sting of tobacco, then exhaled toward the night sky.
"Because she's too good for me."
The brothers guffawed.
"What?"
I demanded.
"You think I was good enough for Angelina?"
Nash asked with a smirk.
Knox grinned. "I know none of you think I was anywhere near Daisy's league."
"This is true," Steph agreed. "They're both 1,000 times too good for you."
"Aren't relationships supposed to make you feel worthy?" I asked. It sounded like something my therapist would have said.
"Pretty sure the only dumbass who can make you feel worthy is you," Nash said.
"The second you think you're as good as or better than your woman is the second it all starts going to hell," Knox said.
I swiped my bleeding mouth across my sleeve and took another drag.
"So you're just supposed to what? Drag them down to your level?"
Knox threw a pea-sized piece of gravel at me.
"No, you fucking moron. You're supposed to spend the rest of your lucky-ass life trying to live up to them."
"That sounds exhausting."
"It sure ain't for the faint of heart," Jeremiah said. I rubbed my jaw. My face and fists hurt like a bitch, but that tightness in my chest seemed just a little looser.
"You coming back in?"
Knox asked, gesturing toward Honky Tonk. I shook my head. I needed to be alone. Steph and Jeremiah hauled the Morgan brothers to their feet. Nash reached down and clapped a hand on my shoulder.
"You're not a bad guy, Luce. You're just an idiot."
"Thanks," I said dryly, and watched the brothers limp back to the bar together. Jeremiah followed with a wink at Steph. Steph held out a hand to me, and I took it.
"You know, I've spent the last few weeks second, third, and fourth guessing myself," he said.
"About what?" My left eye was swelling, making it hard to see him.
"About everything. Moving here, making things official with Jeremiah, committing."
"There's nothing wrong with being wary of commitment," I pointed out, testing my aching jaw.
"There's wary and there's chicken shit."
"Bite me," I muttered.
"Listen, I'm the last guy to give relationship advice," Steph admitted. "But the way you look at her, it wasn't just a good time.
Everyone in this fucking town thinks there's a goddamn happily ever after for everyone. You know nothing about our situation," I reminded him.
"No, but you're making me wonder if it's not better to at least take a chance. Maybe getting my heart ripped out and stomped on is better than being too afraid to try in the first place."
"Love makes men stupid," I quipped.
"Yes, it does. But does denying it make us stupider?"
35. "You love me, you idiot." Sloan. "What goes better with intermittent crying jags, grilled chicken salads or cheesesteaks?" my mother asked, holding up 2 takeout menus. It was Monday, and my mom and I had taken the day off to go through some of Dad's things. We were in my parents' bedroom, working our way through his collection of books, deciding what to keep, what to donate, and what to sell. "Tears make cheesesteaks too soggy. What about grilled cheese?" "Perfect. There's a gourmet grilled cheese place right around the corner. I'll order," Mom said. Frankly, I wasn't hungry, a statement I rarely got to make since it usually only signified the onset of a stomach bug. But this was no stomach bug. This was shame. After my run-in with Lucian and his cock at Honky Tonk Friday night, I'd been feeling furious with myself and more than a little guilty. I'd been on a date with another man, a perfect one on paper, yet I still couldn't keep my hands to myself. I'd been a willing participant in the hallway second base ambush. Then I'd forced Lucian's friends to police him when I was just as much at fault. and judging from their bruised and bleeding faces when Knox and Nash returned to the bar, there had been a lot of policing. I was embarrassed and disappointed in myself. Mom returned and gracefully sank back to the floor. "This sucks," I said as tears escaped my burning eyes. "I miss Dad." "I know you do, honey. I do too. So much." "Damn it," I wailed. "I thought I'd be done crying by now." "Ah, to be so stupidly naive," Mom teased, cupping my damp face in her hand. "Let's get a few more piles done before the food arrives." We both took a moment to blow our noses and compose ourselves. "How about this one?" I asked, holding up a thick tome on Virginia tax law. "Donate." "Oh, do you remember this one?" She held up a worn law book. "Your father used to quiz Maeve on the legal precedents in family law when she told him she wanted to be a lawyer at 10. The memory floated over me like a soft blanket. Dad and Maeve cozied up in the breakfast nook with legal pads and law books, while Mom helped me with my homework at the kitchen island. Dad had been so proud and excited that his oldest daughter wanted to follow in his steps. Teenage Maeve was fierce and determined to be the best. "Definitely a keeper. Put it in the Maeve box." "So I need to ask you something that's probably going to upset you," Mom announced, dropping the book in the box. "Is this what it feels like to be a parent?" I joked. "Lucian," she said. I went still. "What about him?" She couldn't know about our brief, ill-advised fling, could she? She would have said something. Unless she was saying something now. Mom pushed a tall stack of alumni magazines into the recycle pile with her feet. "I know you two don't really talk, but I was wondering if you'd heard anything about him lately. He canceled our dinner 2 weeks in a row and hasn't been returning my calls since. It's highly unlike him, and I'm worried." It appeared as though Lucian had dumped 2 out of 3 Walton women. "You two sure seem to spend a lot of time together," I ventured. "Don't get all snooty about it. Your father and I adore Lucian. He's been part of our lives since he snuck into your room that first time. It was our greatest disappointment that you two didn't fall in love and make a bunch of beautiful grandbabies for us." My mother was joking, but given my current life goals and Lucian's recent occupation of my vagina, it felt like a personal attack. "You're more likely to end up with Michael B. Jordan as a son-in-law than Lucian Rollins," I said dryly. "Cute and talented. I wouldn't be upset having to stare at that gorgeous face every Thanksgiving," Mom teased. "So you haven't heard anything?" "I'm worried. It's not like him to ghost me, as the young people say. He's done a lot for your father and me, especially since we moved down here, and I miss him." I wanted to quiz her on all the ways the emotionally stunted stallion had supported my parents, but I heard the sadness in her tone and felt like an ass. A guilty ass. If my non-breakup with Lucian had cost my mother her relationship with him, that meant now she was missing 2 men instead of receiving all the support she deserved. And I was going to let Lucian know that was unacceptable at the first possible moment. "I'm sure he's just busy," I fibbed. "I bet he'll be calling you up for lunch next week." I would rain hellfire down on him to make sure of it. "I hope so," Mom said. She dumped the remaining law books on the carpet and sprayed down the bookshelf with a thick layer of lemon pledge. "Enough about me. How's the husband hunt going?" "It's going. I had a first date with Kurt Michaels Friday night." I did not add that I'd all but jerked off Lucian in the hallway during said date. My mother didn't need to know she'd raised a trollop. Mom abandoned her dusting. "And?" she prompted. "And he's nice. He's smart. Cute. Obviously great with kids. He's looking to settle down. And unlike everyone else I've dated, he isn't married, lying, or running from the law. She raised a motherly eyebrow. But? How do you know there's a but? I demanded. Mother's intuition. Just like I knew you were planning to sneak out to Sherry Salama's Sweet 16 when you were grounded. I sighed. On paper, he's perfect. Hell, in person, he's perfect. But there's no... Engulfing flames of desire? All-consuming need to tear his pants off? Off-the-charts chemical reaction? Spark, Mom supplied. Spark seemed too tame in comparison to what I'd experienced with Lucian. I shrugged. Maybe I just want too much. Maybe I can't have it all in a partner. I mean, who gets to have a husband who changes diapers, respects your work, and performs like a romance novel hero between the sheets? Mom threw her arm over my shoulder. You'd be surprised. If you're going to use this as a segue to tell me about your sex life with Dad, I will send you the bill for therapy. I'll get my checkbook. I groaned and slumped against her. Why does it have to be such a pain in the ass process? Nothing worthwhile is easy. Finding a partner isn't about ticking all the boxes. No one is perfect, not even you, Sloaney Baloney. Falling in love is about discovering someone who makes you better than you are alone, and vice versa. I plucked at the carpet. What if they hurt you? People make mistakes, a lot of them. You get to decide which ones are forgivable. What kind of mistakes did Dad make? He was always late. He brought his work home with him. When he was working on a case that was particularly important to him, he was in his head and not present with us. He had terrible taste in fashion. He was always sneaking junk food into the grocery cart. I chuckled. But the good always outweighed the bad. Your father and I had a very robust sex life, you know, Mom added with a wicked gleam. Mom! She collapsed on the floor, laughing. Ah, that never gets old. You drive me to drink, I said, joining her on the carpet and staring up at the ceiling. I'm just returning the favor. Mom, I don't know if I ever really told you, but thank you for being such a great mom. You and Dad never once made me feel like I couldn't. Mom sat up and grabbed a tissue from the box between us and held it to her eyes. Sloan, I appreciate your heartfelt sentiments, but if you want me to stop crying anytime soon, you'd better insult me in the next 10 seconds. Your pot roast is dry, and I think your obsession with teeth is creepy. We were still half crying, half laughing when the doorbell rang. Mom got to her feet. I'll get the food. I heard her blowing her nose noisily through the condo. I hefted the 1,000,000-pound box of gardening books and lugged it over to the writing desk. I slid it onto the surface and accidentally sent a stack of paperwork flying. Crap, I muttered. I knelt on the floor and began collecting papers, creating a sloppy pile of death certificate copies, greeting cards, and medical bills. Floor picnic, or should we eat at the table like civilized people? Mom called. Floor, I yelled back, spotting one last paper that landed between the wall and the leg of the desk. I crawled over and retrieved it. A name caught my eye as I transferred it to the top of the stack. Frowning, I skimmed the document. Litchfield Laboratories. Paid in full. Lucian Rollins. I felt an icy rush of shock sweep through me. Mom stuck her head in the door. Do you want more wine, a sparkling water, or should we switch to Bloody Marys since I forgot to order tomato soup? What's this? I asked, holding up the statement. She glanced at it, and I saw the flash of guilt followed by an involuntary softening. That's what I wasn't supposed to tell you about. What the hell is wrong with you? I demanded, bursting into Lucian's office, waving the statement like I was leading a marching band. Behind his desk, he looked at me with that cool, flat mask, but there was heat in his eyes, and bruises on his face. He looked like some heart-throbby, heroic boxer who'd lost a title fight. Sorry, sir, Petula huffed, screeching to a halt in the doorway behind me. She's faster than I thought.
It's fine, Lucian said, making it sound like it was anything but fine.
Kick his ass, Petula said to me under her breath and disappeared.
You may go, Nalana,
Lucian told the woman in the chair across from him. Her hands were tucked in the pocket of a 9-inch nails sweatshirt. She looked amused. But I want to stay and watch the show, she said.
Go away,
Lucian said, eyes still on me. On a sigh, she hopped out of the chair, shot me a wink, and left. I slapped the paper down on his desk. Then, just to be a jerk, I dragged my fingertips across the spotless glass top. Explain.
I owe you zero explanations. You need to leave.
Not until you explain this, I said, drilling my finger into the paper. He glanced down at it, then reached into his desk drawer and did something I didn't expect. The son of a bitch put on a sexy pair of reading glasses. It was like the universe was mocking me. The hot guy who rocked my world between the sheets and wore reading glasses was the one man I didn't want.
This looks like an invoice that's been satisfied, he said, as though I was the dumbest human on the planet. Now, if you don't mind, I don't want you here.
I know that, you insufferable oaf. It's a medical invoice for an experimental cancer treatment not covered by health insurance. Why is your name on it?
My name is on a lot of things, he said.
He took off his readers, then fed the paper through the shredder at his feet.
If that's all, I'll have security escort you out.
There was a tension in him, a nervousness that I'd never seen before. I'm not leaving without answers. The faster you give them to me, the sooner I'll be gone. He snatched up his desk phone and dialed.
Ms. Walton will be requiring an escort back to her mother's place in 5 minutes.
I crossed my arms and glared at him as he listened to whoever was on the other end of the phone call.
Yes, have her vehicle swept and post a guard.
He hung up abruptly and leveled me with an icy look.
Ask your questions, and then you need to go.
I was hanging on by sheer will. I closed my eyes and took a calming breath. Lucian, why is your name on an astronomically expensive cancer treatment for my father? A treatment I was told was a clinical trial. A treatment that gave him 6 more weeks with us. My voice broke pathetically. The tension between us ratcheted up to unbearable heights. We stared each other down, even as my eyes dampened.
Don't do this, Sloan, he said quietly. Please.
For once in your life, just tell me, I begged.
You should discuss this with your mother.
She told me to talk to you. He was silent for a long beat.
He wanted one more Christmas with you.
I took a step back and hid my face behind my hands.
You're not going to cry, are you?
He demanded gruffly. I have a lot of feelings right now, and I'm not sure which one is going to win out, I said from behind my hands.
You're angry with me, he surmised.
I'm not angry that you spent 7 figures giving me a few more weeks with my father, assface. I'm beyond grateful for that, and I have no idea how to handle it. But why would you do something like this without telling me? Why hide this?
Perhaps you should try taking deep breaths outside, far away from my office.
What else? I demanded.
I'm not following you, he said, gaze darting toward the door. I closed the distance between us, gripped his damn tie, and looked him in the eye. I'm giving you this one last opportunity to be honest with me. What else have you paid for or donated or created for my benefit without ever telling me while still treating me like I'd ruined your life?
I don't know what you're talking about.
I inhaled sharply. So Yoshino Holdings, the Stella Partnership, and the Bing Group aren't ringing any bells? His face hardened.
I'm in the middle of a very busy day.
I gave his tie a yank. I don't care if you're in the middle of your own life-saving appendectomy, Lucifer. We are having this conversation. His silence was stony, and it damned him. The Yoshino Holdings Foundation funded a $100,000 grant that allowed the library to upgrade our computer system and start the tablet and laptop lending programs. The Stella Partnership awarded the library a $75,000 grant to extend our community program offerings, including creating a position for Naomi. And the Bing Group funded a generous donation to cover the rest of the building costs of the Knox Morgan Municipal Building, which coincidentally houses my library.
If you're finished.
Lucian, all those organizations are named after cherry tree varieties. And all of them are owned by you. It was all coming together into one unimaginable picture in my head. He scoffed.
I don't know where you get your information, but I can assure you.
I'm a librarian, you hulking pain in the ass. It's my job to know things. What I don't know is why you would be funding my dreams with your money when, as you so eloquently put it, you can barely stand the sight of me.
I don't need to explain my tax write-offs to you.
I don't know if I want to throw your stapler through your window or at your head, I muttered, stepping away from him and starting to pace.
I'd prefer the window, he said behind me.
I glanced down as I passed his desk and spotted something familiar in the still open top drawer. Oh my God, I said, snatching up a pair of broken glasses. My broken glasses. They'd fallen off during a Halloween skirmish in Knockemout, and I hadn't been able to find them.
Stay out of my things,
Lucian said, starting for me. I held up the glasses. If I mean nothing to you, why did you give me more time with my dad? Why did you donate so much money to my causes? And why the hell are you keeping my glasses that I lost at Book or Treat last fall in your top desk drawer?
Lower your voice, or security is going to carry you out of here,
he growled. Say the words, Lucian.
If you're going to waste my time speaking in riddles, you might as well sit down and drink some damn water,
he said gruffly, heading for the crystal decanter on the conference table. You love me, you idiot! You've loved me since we were kids! You loved me even when I broke your trust! You loved me after I fixed it! You still love me! He stopped mid-stride and turned to glower at me.
You didn't fix anything. You nearly got yourself killed. And if he had gotten out for even an hour, he would have made sure to end you. That's what he did to things I cared about. There is no court order that would have protected you from him.
So you protected me by keeping our friendship a secret. And you continued to protect me by pushing me away. I was just some crazy, nosy neighbor girl.
He would have found a way to hurt you. He did find a way to hurt you.
He's gone now, Lucian. He's dead. What's your excuse now?
I don't know where this narrative is coming from, but you're embarrassing yourself. I don't love you,
he insisted. His tone was even and chilly, his face stony. But I could see the truth, the yearning in his eyes. "Are you sure that's the answer you want to stick with?" I whispered.
"I don't love you,"
he insisted stubbornly. I let out a shaky breath. After all those years, all the things we've been through together, you still can't even be honest with me.
"I'm being honest,"
he said, not quite meeting my eyes. "You love me," I repeated. Twin tears escaped, sliding hotly down my cheeks. "You love me, and yet you're content to never try. That's not sad. That's pathetic."
"You need to leave, Sloane,"
he said sharply. My heart felt like it had been tossed into a wood chipper. Everything hurt. "I will." I headed for the door and then stopped. "I'll never be able to repay you for those last months with my father."
"I don't want you to repay me,"
he muttered, shoving a hand through his hair.
"You can't come here again. It's not safe."
"Fine. But you can't give me anything again. No more secret donations. No more keeping an eye on me. Thank you for your baffling generosity. But understand this. I can't accept anything else from you. Ever."
"Why?"
"Because, after all this, I think we both deserve a clean break." He was still a long moment as his eyes roamed my face, looking for something that he wasn't going to find.
"There was never going to be an us, Sloane. He made sure of that."
I shook my head. "Your father is dead, Lucian. You're the one who made sure there would never be an us." I headed for the door again, hoping to hold it together long enough to get out of the office. Two burly security guys were waiting for me in the hall. I paused in the doorway and turned around one last time. "I loved you, you know? When we were kids, I loved you. And I think I could have again." His eyes went stormy, but he stayed where he was and said absolutely nothing. "By the way," I continued, "just because you're done with me doesn't mean you get to dump my mother, too. She misses you, so pick up your goddamn phone and call her."
"That's not a good idea right now,"
he hedged. "Take her to lunch or dinner or whatever the hell you two do, and do it now, or I will find new and creative ways to torture you for hurting her when she's already grieving. Do not abandon my mother."
"This a good time, boss?"
Nolan said, strolling between the two guards. He looked up from the fat file in his hands.
"Nope, never mind. Very not good time. Good to see you, Blondie."
36. Too many whammies. Sloane.
"Your podcast interview about Mary Louise is getting a lot of hits."
"Really?" I asked, stirring my ice cream in a clockwise motion. Kurt Michaels was smart, charming, and handsome. He told dad jokes and wore sexy cardigans and hot nerd glasses. Total dad material. Unlike some others, who were just daddy material. He held my hand. He opened doors for me. He listened carefully. He took an interest in things that were important to me, like Mary Louise's case. And on our previous two dates, I had never once felt the need to fake an emergency or climb out a bathroom window. Also, he bore a striking resemblance to Michael B. Jordan. But this was our third date, and I was having heart palpitations over the idea of sex. Not the good kind, either. It wasn't that I assumed Kurt was going to be bad in bed. I'd scoped out his dance moves from the Christmas concert video on the school's Facebook page. The man knew how hips worked. Plus, we'd shared two perfectly pleasant kisses at the end of each previous date. But I knew deep down, in the vagina region, that Lucian Rollins had ruined me. And I wasn't mentally ready to accept just how badly. Kurt's dark, smooth hand reached across the table and squeezed mine. I jumped.
Sloan,
he said expectantly.
What?
I tried to remember if he'd asked me a question.
I get the feeling that you're somewhere else. Possibly with someone else.
I winced, my single girl on a hot date facade crumbling like a toy block tower.
It's not exactly like that. I really like you, I insisted.
I'm pretty likable,
he agreed amicably.
You'd make a great husband and father, and you don't have any obvious red flags or impossible to overcome emotional baggage.
He flashed me one of those sexy smiles.
What can I say? I'm a catch. Why don't you skip ahead to the it's not you, it's me part?
I groaned and stared at the half-eaten cup of rocky road. I know everyone says this, but in this case it's true. It really isn't you. It's all me. He cocked his head like the hella good listener he was.
You have feelings for someone else, he stated.
How did you... Never mind. It's not those kinds of feelings. More like... I'm filled with rage and annoyance and frustration towards someone else. But also, seriously, how did you know?
He blew out a breath.
I'm getting over someone else, too. Or trying. She wasn't ready for a relationship. So I'm attempting to move on.
Same, dude, I admitted, slumping in my chair with relief. Except I don't want to get over him. I want to exorcise him. If never seeing him again isn't an option, then I want to figure out a way to feel nothing.
That sounds like there are some very strong feelings still in play,
Kurt observed.
Homicidal feelings, I insisted.
He's all wrong for me. He wants nothing I want. Hell, he doesn't even want me. And I don't even want him. We just have this physical connection that...
And I shouldn't be talking about this on a date with another man.
He shrugged.
Maybe you just need some kind of closure before you can move on.
Believe me, I got all the closure any normal, sane person would need. But there's this dumb sliver of idiotic romantic in me that wonders how a physical attraction can be so powerful, so good, when the rest is just hot garbage.
I winced.
Sorry. Tell me about your situation before I humiliate myself further.
Kurt grimaced.
You might feel homicidal toward me if I tell you.
I perked up.
Trust me, you can't be any worse than I am.
You're going to regret saying that, he predicted.
He looked so earnest and concerned.
This is going nowhere between us, right?
I confirmed.
Unfortunately... That's how it appears,
he agreed.
Okay, then. This should make you feel better. I ran into the guy I was seeing on our first date at Honky Tonk. He stupidly asked me to come back to his place, even though he made it clear he wanted nothing to do with me besides sex. Like a hormonal tramp, I stupidly let him get too close, ran a couple of bases with him in the hallway on our date, then told him to never speak to me again.
He leaned back in his chair.
That actually does make me feel better.
My eyebrows shot up.
Really? Lay it on me. It can't be worse than my confession.
Feeling relieved and unburdened, I shoved a heaping spoonful of ice cream into my mouth.
I'm in love with your sister.
I choked on my rocky road, unprepared for the whammy. Excuse me? I rasped.
Here,
he said, pushing a glass of water toward me.
You can drink it or throw it in my face.
Maeve? I rasped. He nodded, then swiped his hand over his face.
It started last summer. We met at the end of school assembly, hit it off, then had a summer fling. It was just supposed to be fun. She was busy. I'd just landed a job here. Obviously, it was a terrible idea. She's the mother of one of my students.
I can't believe it, I said.
I know. I'm a monster, he said.
No, that you two were able to keep a secret like that and knock him out.
You're not mad?
I shook my head. I'm impressed. Keeping secrets and knock them out is like training an army of cats to do your bidding. It's just not possible. So why did you let my friends hook us up?
He looked sheepish. Part of me, a pathetic part, thought that if Maeve didn't want to be with me, at least I could stay in her life. The incredibly stupid part of me thought maybe it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world if Maeve was a little jealous.
Wow.
I'm not proud of it, and I was going to tell you tonight that I wasn't over Maeve right after I told you I wasn't going to be able to have sex with you.
I wore granny underwear and didn't shave my legs, I confessed. He grinned. We were still laughing when we entered the parking lot 10 minutes later. It was dark, and I'd chosen the cafe in Lawlerville to avoid another potential run-in with Lucian and knock him out. So what are we going to do? I asked him.
Well, the obvious hijinks choice would be to fake date each other until our exes are overcome with jealousy. But seeing as how we're adults and I'd hate to do any damage to your relationship with your sister, maybe we should go with option B.
Friends?
Friends,
he agreed.
You know, I really wanted to be there for Maeve when your dad passed. I tried reaching out a couple of times, but she made it clear it was something she wanted to deal with alone.
She pushed you away. I'm familiar with that feeling, I said. Kurt nudged my shoulder as we approached my Jeep.
For what it's worth, Lucian is a simpleton if he doesn't recognize his feelings for you.
My feet skidded to a halt on the asphalt. How did you know?
Knock him out doesn't keep secrets. I saw the way he looked at you when we walked into Honky Tonk. That's not nothing. And it sure isn't hate.
The moon was rising behind him. The trees had thousands of buds. Spring was coming. New beginnings. But all I could think about was the most recent ending. I had a really good time tonight, I told Kurt.
I did too.
I rose on tiptoe and pressed a kiss to his cheek. He wrapped me in a warm hug. He was going to make an excellent brother-in-law someday, I decided.
Maybe we can make one of those pacts where if we're not married by the time we're 50, we'll take the plunge.
I grinned. Sounds like a plan to me. I got in my Jeep and watched him cross the parking lot to his car. I waited until he pulled out before grabbing my phone and opening my texts. Maeve and I were in for a very interesting conversation. I yelped when my door was yanked open. A big gloved fist gripped my sweater and pinned me to my seat. Another one covered my mouth, muffling my scream. I couldn't breathe. My attacker had sealed his hand over my mouth, and one of his fingers covered my nostrils. I immediately felt dizzy with panic as I stared at the black ski mask where a face should be. What did he want? Money? My Jeep? I hoped it wasn't me. I flailed against his grip and opened my mouth.
Stop trying to bite me,
my attacker complained.
I got a message for you.
Adrenaline dumped into my system. My free hand dove into my tote, feeling around for my pepper spray while I tried to memorize important details. Height? Taller than me? Weight? How the hell should I know? He was dressed all in black, and the dashboard light did nothing to illuminate any details. Was he familiar? Did I recognize his voice? His smell? Was that cinnamon? Was my attacker chewing gum?
Leave Upshaw where she belongs,
the man said.
Mary Louise?
My words were smothered by the thick glove. This wasn't a random mugging or carjacking. Someone had followed me here and waited for me.
Leave it alone, or you will get hurt,
he said. Then the hand on my chest disappeared for a second before returning to slap something that sounded like paper over my heart.
This is your final warning. Heed it, please.
It sounded like a genuine plea. Was it possible that my assailant didn't actually want to hurt me? Or maybe I was hallucinating. The lack of oxygen and the blood thundering in my ears could be distorting everything. Then he was gone just as suddenly as he'd appeared. This was too many whammies in one night. With shaking hands, I reached for the door handle and yanked it shut. It took me 4 tries to find and press the lock button. By the time I had, my attacker was nowhere to be seen. With shaking hands, I found my phone on the floor and dialed.
Nash?
I wasn't a nail biter, but I'd nibbled my way through my left hand and was about to start on the right. On the surface, Nash looked calm, but his leg was bouncing under the table. After giving my statement to the Lawlerville police, I had begged Nash to take me to see Mary Louise. I had an awful feeling in the pit of my stomach. He'd put up a fight, seeing as how I was ready to disobey direct orders from an anonymous bad guy. But I needed to see with my own eyes that she was okay, and Nash wasn't ready to let me out of his sight. Are all prisons this awful? I asked Nash. He glanced around at the cracked ceiling tiles, the flickering fluorescent lights, the peeling vinyl floor.
No, the place Tina Witt's in looks like a country club in comparison.
I frowned. What's the difference?
This place is privately owned, which means the owners can funnel the profits into their bank accounts. There's no real incentive to improve the facilities if you get to pocket what's left over after expenses.
The door opened and I jumped out of my chair. Mary Louise entered.
Oh my God, are you okay?
Her face was bruised and swollen, and her left arm was cradled against her chest in a sling. But what made it all worse was the fear in her eyes. I wanted to hug her, but she looked as if she were about to collapse in on herself.
Do you need a doctor?
I'm fine, she assured me.
What happened?
Nash asked.
A little altercation in the cafeteria, she said dully.
It happens.
We need to get you out of here. I'm calling Fran, I decided.
Don't, Mary Louise said, her voice suddenly sharp. She shook her head.
No more calls. No more petitions. No more meetings. I'm done.
What are you saying? I whispered, sinking back into my chair.
Did someone threaten you, Mary Louise?
Nash asked. Her gaze shifted to the door.
I'm saying it's best for everyone if I serve out the rest of my sentence.
No, I said firmly.
We're so close, Mary Louise. Don't you want to see Alan graduate?
She shook her head again, tears welling in her eyes.
It was foolish of me to hope. There are better ways for you to spend your money, other people you can help. I can do another 9 years.
She said it like she was trying to convince herself. I looked at Nash with desperation, but he shook his head at me. His eyes all cop.
Listen to me, Mary Louise, I tried again. We'll figure this out. I'll do whatever I can to keep you safe. Just don't make any decisions yet until I see what I can do.
You don't understand. I need to stay here. I need you to stop helping.
We can't just leave her in there,
I said, jogging to keep up with Nash as we headed toward his SUV.
Just let me think, Sloane.
She's obviously being threatened. Someone attacked her, and now all of a sudden she doesn't want us to help?
I know. Calm down and shut up so I can think.
We don't have time to think.
Nash stopped, and I ran into his broad back. He turned to face me.
Honey, I know. But you need to understand, you getting attacked the same day that Mary Louise gets jumped is not a coincidence. They might be focusing their threats on the two of you, but that doesn't mean you're the only two targets.
Alan, I said, realization dawning. He nodded.
And Lena, and Naomi, and Maeve, and anyone else involved in this case.
I closed my eyes. Damn it. She'd never risk Alan, let alone anyone else.
You call Fran,
Nash said, unlocking the doors and pulling out his phone. Who are you calling? I demanded. He looked me dead in the eyes.
Who do you think?
What the hell is Lucian going to do?
He's the only one I can think of with the strings to pull to get her and Alan the protection they need immediately.
He was right. I put my hand on his arm. Don't tell him about me. Please.
Sloane, you're in fucking danger. You were threatened tonight.
I am aware, Chief. But it's none of his damn business. Besides, I have you. Lucian needs to focus his evil powers on protecting Mary Louise and Alan. 37. It's getting hot in here. Sloane. The only thing I liked more than a closed library was an open one. Surrounded by all those books, all those worlds waiting to be explored on the page, the ASMR-like buzz of whispers, keyboards, and turning pages. But I usually enjoyed the after-hours silence almost as much. Except now it gave me too much time to think. I'd worked open to close today, not because it was necessary, but because I didn't know what else to do. It had been 2 weeks since the threats against me and Mary Louise. Lucian had worked his dark magic and got Mary Louise transferred to a new prison, the one Naomi's sister Tina was serving time in, the morning after. But even though Alan was now protected by full-time security, she was still refusing to move forward with her own case. Naomi and Lena had slowly relinquished their obsessive need to check in with me. After 5 successive nights of sleepovers, we'd all agreed that I was probably safe enough in my house with its locks, new basic security cameras that Waylay helped me install, and hourly police drive-bys. And being the excellent friends they were, they'd agreed not to mention the inciting incident to Lucian. My personal life was non-existent thanks to the near-constant presence of the Knock-Em-Out PD, who were keeping an eye on me, and looking into who would want to keep Mary Louise behind bars. Even if I'd wanted to date, it would have been too awkward with a uniformed armed babysitter tagging along. To make matters worse, I was under strict orders from Nash to leave the investigations to the professionals. I could have used the distraction of some interesting research to dig into, but Nash had used his scary cop voice and threatened to tell Lucian I'd been targeted if I didn't agree. So I'd mostly acquiesced. Sure, maybe I took a peek at Mary Louise's case files from her trial every night until I was too bleary-eyed to see straight. I wasn't hurting anyone. And if I found something, it would be better for everyone in the long run, considering the police investigation consisted of a series of dead ends. Not only were there no fingerprints or other identifiable evidence left from my attacker, but by all accounts, the attack on Mary Louise appeared to be random and unprovoked. A soft thump from the children's section had me bobbling 2 John Sanford novels. I blew out a frustrated breath, fluffing my hair away from my face and fogging my glasses. Ever since the man with the cinnamon breath had scared the shit out of me, I'd been an anxiety-ridden hot mess. Get a grip, I muttered to myself. I was disappointed in myself. I'd always thought I'd react to a dangerous situation with the quick wit and backbone of a feisty heroine. or at least like an adorably bumbling Stephanie Plum. Instead, I was waiting for a hero to save me. And not even my own hero. Nope. I was waiting for my friend's fiancé, the chief of police, to save my ass. It was a sobering, humbling thought. I finished scanning in the evening's book returns, then turned out the lights on the first floor before heading upstairs to my office. There were a few more admin tasks I wanted to see to. Not that they needed to be done tonight, but what else did I have to do? Besides, the library was the only place the cops felt comfortable leaving me the hell alone, since it was attached to the station and all. Someone would have to be quite the idiot to try to do harm next to an entire police department. Upstairs, I settled in behind my desk with a fresh root beer and cranked my Get Shit Done playlist. By the time Joan Jett's I Hate Myself for Loving You came on, I'd scheduled out 3 weeks of social media posts for the library's Facebook and Instagram pages, drafted the next 2 weeks' worth of newsletters, and ordered several new indie novels for circulation. I'd never been so far ahead on my to-do list in my entire life. There was only one person to blame. I took out my phone and scrolled through my messages. Despite the fact that I hadn't answered him, Lucian had continued to text me daily. Assface.
I had dinner with your mother.
Assface.
I think she needs a pet to keep her company.
Assface.
Cat or dog?
Assface.
Small, condo-sized pony?
Assface.
It doesn't have to be this way, Pixie. We could find a way to be friends.
Friends? Ha. Friends trusted each other. Friends were honest with each other. I'd wasted enough of my life on a man who was never going to admit to having feelings for me. I didn't need anything else from Lucian Rollins. I had more important things to do. Probably. How was I supposed to find a man, allow him the space and time to prove to me that he was trustworthy, and then convince him to get married while my eggs were still viable? That seemed like a decades-long project. What if my eggs weren't actually viable? What if I wasn't going to find a Simon Walton? What if that wasn't part of my story? Oh my God, I'm annoying myself, I complained over my music. Stop moping and fucking do something. But what? My heart and vagina just weren't into the dating scene. But that didn't mean I had no other options. I thought of Knox and Naomi and Waylay. Then, chewing on my lower lip, I navigated to the county's foster care system page and started scrolling. Icona Pop was in the middle of the chorus of I Love It when a faraway noise dragged me out of research mode. I turned down the music to listen, only to be startled by the ancient printer spitting out the foster care and adoption brochures. I snatched the papers out of the tray and strained my ears. Nothing. It was probably a book tumbling off a shelf or one of the heavy poster boards in the children's section finally winning its war against the tape. I returned the music to its original volume and launched my inbox to take care of a few remaining tasks. This time, it wasn't a sound that caught my attention. It was a smell. A faint, bitter chemical scent. Almost like melting plastic or old stale coffee that had cooked to the bottom of the pot. I'd turned off the coffee makers, hadn't I? Yes, I always remembered to do it after seeing the news special about a family's house that had burned down on Christmas Eve due to a faulty air fryer. I pushed away from my desk with a frown. The smell was getting stronger now. The lights in the library were still out, but there appeared to be a sort of eerie glow through my office window. Was it getting hotter in here? Maybe the furnace was on the fritz. I opened my office door and the sharp tang of smoke hit me. What the? It couldn't be a fire. The entire building had been equipped with a state-of-the-art sprinkler system when it had been built. But there was no mistaking that orange, undulating glow coming from the first floor, or the punch of heat that enveloped my body. I raced back to my desk and picked up the phone to call for help, but there was no dial tone. The line was dead. Damn it! Okay. Think, Sloane. Do not fucking panic. With shaking hands, I found my cell phone and managed to dial 911. As it rang, I gathered my tote, indiscriminately shoving books and personal items inside. I yanked Ezra Abbott's Valentine's Day pirate drawing off the window and rolled it up. 911, what is your emergency? This is Sloane Walton calling from the Knockemout Public Library, I said as I raced back to the door. There's a fire in the library. At least I think it's a fire. The air felt thick and hot, and it burned the back of my throat. A coughing fit overtook me, and I bent at the waist, trying to suck in a breath.
Calm down, ma'am. Please tell me your location.
Don't tell me to calm down, Charisse, and don't ma'am me either. The library is on fire, I rasped as I left my office. Charisse was a recent graduate of Knockemout High School and had been a library summer camp counselor for the last 3 years. It was getting hotter by the second, as if I'd relinquished thermostat control to the always cold Barbara during book club. Fires required fire extinguishers. I embraced the thought with relief. I remembered the big red one hanging on the wall in the kitchen. Ducking low to see through dark, fetid smoke, I headed away from the stairs and toward the kitchen. I was sweating freely.
Sorry, Sloane, do you know where the fire is located?
I think it's on the first floor. I'm upstairs. I cradled the phone against my shoulder and blindly felt along the wall, bending over as far as I could in search of fresh air. My fingers found the protrusion of the doorframe, and I hurriedly reached for the handle. It was warmer than it should be against my palm.